What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
Where the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
Welcome back to the Rodcast. You can always be a part of the show. Hit us up on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776. I am Ed Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. My man Wags, he is back in full effect. You can hit him up via Twitter at NotTheFakeWags. Hump Day edition of the Rodcast. Ric Flair Wednesday. Woo! Edition of the Rodcast. Call it whatever you want. All right, we got a lot to get to. We don't have a lot of time to do it. We'll go behind the burnt orange curtain, of course, and talk Texas football because there are plenty of news, notes, and nuggets and other items to get to behind the burnt orange curtain. We'll talk about that coming up a little bit later on in this segment. Also, we'll reflect upon yesterday's news conference. Press conference from Maryland, and they announced that they were taking full responsibility for the death of one of their players, Jordan McNair, and also that Rick Court, one of the strength and conditioning coach, one of the assistant coaches, that he had resigned. He was fired. He is no longer with the program as a result of the findings that they had come to in the investigation, and which is ongoing, by the way. So they say as that investigation continues, they will make more or take more appropriate measures and take the appropriate action. DJ Durkin, the head coach, who is indefinitely suspended, he's on administrative leave. He may be the next to go, depending on what they find out in their internal investigation going on. They give it up for Maryland because listen, we're in a time now in college sports where we're demanding that not only these college football coaches and that these institutions and programs do what is required, but also do what is right. Sometimes they are the same thing. Sometimes they are in conflict. But you know, Maryland didn't even do what was required. The bare minimum to try to save the young man. And we talked about that ad nauseum yesterday. I'm not going to go through it, and they admitted it, so there's no need to even dive into it, that they did not do the bare minimum what was required once they realized that he was suffering from heat exhaustion and heat stroke. But this is, a smaller smaller sample and a microcosm of a much larger conversation. And it really is about this good old boys network that college sports and college football in particular has got going on, where it's all about kind of protecting your own, the curtain that is up, not a lot of transparency. If not for anonymous sources and transparency, then maybe nobody finds out about the mishandling of this young man's heat stroke, which led to his death. And Urban Meyer's now dealing with that situation too. Good old boys network protecting his own, with the Zach Smith situation and him a little bit of advanced nepotism, that being the grandson of Earl Bruce, who was his mentor. A lot of that going on. So he's dealing with a situation where he may have done what was required, the bare minimum, but people are asking now for more social responsibility from the coaches. More obligation to go along with the big salaries. So the sports industrial complex has, it's got both sides of the equation. I mean, both sides of that coin. The reason they get all the straight cash, homie, the big salaries is because of the sports industrial complex. That same sports industrial complex wants more transparency. It asks a lot of questions. How many different sites and how many different news organizations covered the Longhorn program alone. I mean, I can think of six or seven of them off the top of my head. And we work with a lot of them because they all do a damn good job and they work really, really hard. But that's part of the sports industrial complex. It's hard to keep secrets on the 40 acres. There's always somebody digging. There's always some anonymous source. Somebody's looking to find it out. And that's more transparency for the fans. That keeps a lot of the programs on the straight and narrow. I mean, they know that potentially, you know, they don't want to end up like which now has been brought to light, a Penn State or Baylor or a Michigan State or any of the programs. It's good they're making examples out of these programs. So it's one of those things, Urban Meyer, and we don't know anything else from the Urban Meyer situation. And like I said, I think Urban Meyer will get a 4-6 game suspension. That'll pretty much be it. But the Maryland situation, I expect for DJ Durkin to be, you know, removed or him to announce his resignation, I don't know, within a couple of weeks, definitely before Texas ends up playing Maryland. That'll happen. And then Maryland will officially be in disarray. And so then that relates to football. So we'll get to some Texas football discussion, but not to make light of what's happening with Maryland. I do think that Maryland did something really cool that you don't see a lot of institutions do. You didn't see Penn State do it, didn't see Baylor do it. Hell, you didn't even really see Michigan State do it. When you realize that something happened and it's your fault to take accountability and responsibility for it, they did it. That never happens. That's a rarity. I think people were shocked that they just came out and said, it was our fault, it was our responsibility. We'll actually take full responsibility. Actually, we'll make sure that the family's taken care of and we'll make amends. That is something you don't see a lot of times in a college scandal. We're still dealing with Urban Meyer and Ohio State, and you won't get Ohio State or Urban Meyer to admit any wrongdoing. He just admitted he misspoke and misremembered, which meant he lied. And he did actually know about 2015, but he told his superiors or whatever. A lot of political talk. So give it up for Maryland for at least doing what is, you know, the basic, you know, kind of the basic and decent thing to do, which is admit you screwed up and try to make amends. And then try to make sure that somebody's held accountable for it, which hasn't happened yet in Baylor and took a while to happen with Penn State and other scandals that we've seen. So, yeah, I mean, it's still a heartbreaking, and the family, obviously, it'll be tough for them to fill that void because they lost their son. But I'm glad it's not going to be a scandal anymore. It's just Maryland now trying to find a way to rebuild the culture of the program after something devastating brought a toxicity to light. And I think DJ Durkin has done, too. A lot of people are now calling for him to just resign, that he should do the decent thing and resign on his own. They're going to give him due process. I think he'll be out by next week. He'll be done. Yeah, it's pretty damning. Just the old entire, like I said, the reports about the culture and how that may have led up to the mishandling of his heat-related illness, which led to his death. All right, just connecting the dots. All right, I want to get into some Texas football discussion. They had two transfers yesterday, so we'll start off talking about defense. Did some research on Todd Orlando that I think it gives me optimism about the lack of depth that they have in the lack of experience depth they have in the defensive backfield. I don't know if it'll be that big of a problem. Also, we got to talk Cowboys. We didn't get a chance to get to it yesterday. We'll get into the Cowboys and Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey might be my new favorite defensive player in the NFL. Man, Jalen Ramsey.
He's got a QB draft grade.
Man, Jalen Ramsey, he had a GQ interview. You guys talked about it a little bit, I'm sure. And his GQ interview, he was asked about, like, different quarterbacks and, you know, in the league. And he just pretty much went on a rant about what quarterbacks didn't suck and what quarterbacks were decent and good. Oh, man, it was great. So matter of fact, next segment, and you know what? You know, it may end up blowing up in his face. It may end up blowing up in his face. Have you looked at their schedule? A lot of these quarterbacks he's hating on, he's got to play. It's going to be real interesting. So we'll get into that next segment because that's going to be fun. It's kind of when keeping it real goes wrong. And that could end up being when keeping it real goes wrong for Jalen Ramsey. He's talking a lot of trash about what quarterbacks suck and which ones are good. He turns out having to meet a lot of these quarterbacks this upcoming season and then the playoffs. It could blow up in his face. Remember, they did guarantee, didn't Jalen Ramsey guarantee they were going to beat the Patriots and go to the Super Bowl? Yeah, that kind of blew up in his face a little bit. And even if you look at the – every time somebody makes a guarantee or some bold statement, it seems to blow up in their face. The Seattle Seahawks used to do that all the time, make bold statements, and it would blow up in their face. It's one of those things you really don't – you don't want to tempt the football gods. But Jalen Ramsey doesn't give a damn. He's giving the middle finger to the football gods. We'll discuss it because it's really interesting. Also, there are a couple of other sports topics we can throw in the When Keeping It Real Goes Wrong segment since that's what could happen to Jalen Ramsey. All right, we'll also – I want to talk about Tiger Woods a little bit because I saw the odds for a Tiger Woods to win another Masters. And now there is talk of whether a Tiger could ever, catch Jack Nicklaus's and break Jack Nicklaus's record or even tie his record for major wins. And after he got second, last weekend, a lot of people think that, Tiger could now be on the trajectory. I think now he's 26th in the world. And at one point, he was 1,199th in the world. I think it's like 8 months ago. So he's climbed up the ladder pretty quickly. He does have the trajectory. He does have right now that skyrocket trajectory where he could end up winning a major. He was just second at Belle Reve. I don't know if it's going to happen. I always said that Tiger could win another major. I wouldn't go put it past him because he's arguably the greatest golfer of all time. But we'll get into the Tiger GOAT conversation and whether he can win a major. There's some interesting stats and numbers that I'll share with you in regards to that conversation. We'll get into that coming up, too. Also, I want to talk about the Reliable Automotive Horn Top 20. We got today we have the Michigan Wolverines as number 13 on our Top 20 countdown. So we'll get into the Michigan Wolverines. We'll talk about that, too, coming up in the second hour of the show. All right, let's go behind the burn orange curtain. Let's not waste any time and get into some Texas football.
And they were all asking themselves the same question. What is behind that curtain?
All right, so yesterday, Longhorn fans got the news that John Bonney and Eric Cuffey were transferring. John Bonney transferring to Texas Tech, and that was revealed yesterday. And Anwar Richardson revealed that transfer would not be disputed by Tom Herman. Usually in conference transfers, graduate transfers like that, usually there's a stipulation that they can't transfer within the conference or at least on any team on the schedule, I should say. Sometimes it's within the conference, but also teams that are on your schedule that you're going to play that season, usually that is what coaches like to dispute, that you can't transfer to one of those teams. That is not the case for Tom Herman, either one of those cases. He's allowing John Bonney to transfer to Texas Tech, and Texas Tech, of course, within the Big 12 Conference, but also Texas plays Texas Tech, of course, this year because there's a round robin. So a lot of people are, this is unusual. This is not something that, coaches around the country do very often. It may be special cases. So people are surprised by it. Anwar Richardson reported that Tom Herman said he just wants John Bonney to be happy, which is really cool if that's the sentiment. Now I wonder, is it a case-by-case basis, or does everybody get the same treatment if they're graduate transfer? Do they get to transfer within the conference and on a team that's going to play Texas? Some people are worried about the exchange of information, whether John Bonney could share schematic plans and share kind of Todd Orlando's X's and O's philosophy with Texas Tech. Or maybe he could give them, you know, some pointers. I'm sure he can give them some advice, some counsel. I don't know if anything he says could be held concrete, because the coaches at Texas also know that he has certain information. They could use that information against Texas Tech. Texas Tech knows they could use that information against them. And then you get into the information, misinformation. And trust me, a lot of the coaches rather just go watch the film and see if the film, the film backs up whatever your game plan is. Is it backed up by the actual film? Is there evidence to show their tendencies, their habits, what they like to do? So I'm not that really concerned about that. I think it's really cool that Tom Herman may be setting a precedent that, hey, if you're a graduate transfer, if you graduate, you're a good player, don't give us any trouble, that, hey, man, you can transfer within the conference and maybe even on a team that we're going to play that year. And I haven't looked at how many of these, you know, instances across the country there are where guys get to transfer like that, but it's really cool for them. And will Shane Bouchel get the same treatment? Like, if Shane Bouchel wants to transfer to a team, you know, within the conference, and he's a graduate transfer and takes him to play him next year, is I wonder if there's gonna, you know, be some dispute by Tom Herman and company. So yeah, that's the first thing that came to my mind. I was like, man, first of all, bravo Tom Herman for doing the right thing. Not just what is required, but also doing the right thing. We talked about that, too, because it is cool just to put the young man first. Hey, he wants to play. He's got a chance to play. Some people say he may start at Tech, so good for him. But it is good PR, too, by the way. It's good PR for Tom Herman, who just had to deal with fake news over the weekend about him being the source of the Brett McMurphy report and all that kind of stuff. So it's really good PR for Tom Herman. But I just wonder if it's setting a precedent. It'd be really cool if it was. It's a magnanimous gesture by Tom Herman, but you don't see a lot of coaches do it. It may help in the recruiting, too, that coaches, or at least that the recruits, the prospects, think that the coaches, or I believe the coaches, that they're on their side, that they want what's best for them. And that was what was best for John Bonney. And, you know, and one of the things, since it's a, you know, a lot of people are not concerned about the depth, and it does affect the depth of the defensive backfield, which it had depth this year, but it was inexperienced depth because you lost, you know, a lot of starts, a lot of experience with Jason Hall, and you lost it with guys like Deshaun Elliott and Houghton Hill and Antoine Davis, but you brought in that 2018 class. Now the question is, how fast can Todd Orlando and Jason Washington and Craig Navarro, how fast can those coaches get those young DBs on an accelerated track? Can they expedite that development? B.J. Foster, Caden Stearns, and, you know, Anthony Cook now with Devontae Davis down. That's going to be critical, because now, you know, you have Brandon Jones, who can be your communication center back there in the secondary. But if something happens to Brandon Jones, knock on wood, you know, you got to shift some things around. You may have to move P.J. Locke back. My man Jeff Howe brought that up during our Longhorn Blitz podcast. Then you start maybe depending on one of those young guys to be, you know, the communication center in the back end, the guy that's moving different pieces around and recognizing what the offense is doing. You really don't want that responsibility on a young guy. And if you do, then right now you need to start revving up the game plan, at least the timeline, I should say, to get those guys ready to go, to move those guys around and maybe experiment with manufacturing depth in that secondary. And I think that's a good thing, because I think that's why Eric Cuffey ultimately and John Bonney both decided they want to move and transfers, because they saw those young DBs behind them, and they saw how talented that group was. They saw the ceiling, and they said, you know what, this is going to be hard for me to not only crack a starting role, but it's going to be hard for me to even be a role player potentially with this secondary. So that's good, but now you lose a guy that played second, that played, you know, corner, he played safety. John Bonney filled a lot of, he played dime at times for you. I mean, he played a lot of roles in that secondary. Just having that experience, depth, and now not having it, it's gonna hurt. But one thing that will help, I did some research on Todd Orlando. So Todd Orlando is, you know, he's kind of a Svengali. He's a guru in a lot of different ways. But he does maximize talent as well as any DC that I think I've seen in a long, long time. You go look at just on the 40 acres, just his brief time here. How many guys that we've watched for the last 3 years, or we watched them for, you know, 4 years, some of them, and they had their best season ever, their career season under Todd Orlando. That was the case for Puna Ford. It was the case for Malik. It was the case for Houghton Hill, Chris Boyd, Deshaun Elliott, Charles Amenahu, Anthony Wheeler, Antoine Davis. That was the case for. And Brandon Jones, that was the case for him too. Now, it wasn't the case for everybody. Brecken Hager and P.J. Locke and Malcolm Roach and Chris Nelson. There are some guys on defense that are going to have a career year this year that I expect to have a career year this year under Todd Orlando, but they didn't have it last year. But so many guys that we had watched forever, Chris Boyd, Houghton Hill, Malik Jefferson, Puna Ford, Deshaun Elliott, Amenahu, Wheeler, Davis, Brandon Jones, and we were waiting for the light to come on. It seems like Todd Orlando has got a knack for being able to flip that switch. And I went and looked back at, you know, his high-achieving players, at least the NFL-caliber players that he has coached since leaving UConn. Because the truth is, Todd Orlando and all of his stops, the last three stops he's had, he's only been there for 2 years. He's basically two and done every time. He went to Florida International for 2011 and 12, and he was out. Went to Utah State for 2013 and 14, he's gone. Went to U of H for 2015, 16, gone. All right? You know what I mean? He's been a rolling stone for the most part. Now, Texas is paying him enough. They're trying to keep that rolling stone at home. It's hard to do. Because even Tom Herman has admitted he wants to be a head coach one day. But go look at the stops he's had at Florida International and Utah State and U of H. He has upgraded every year in terms of the talent pool and the resources available. First at UConn, then Florida International. I think Florida International, in terms of recruiting, he's in a fertile recruiting ground in Florida. And even, yeah, in UConn, it's, you know, UConn may be a bigger brand of football. You can argue that. But in terms of the athletes available to him, you could argue a guy like Todd Orlando may prefer a fertile recruiting ground with better athletes available, even at a smaller school. He may be able to do more. And he did a lot at Florida National. He actually had two guys drafted at Florida National who had their best years ever, of their careers under Todd Orlando. And Florida International has had four players drafted in the history of the program, two of them under Todd Orlando, and he was there for 2 years. Utah State. He was there for 2 years. He had four players drafted, had their best years ever under Todd Orlando. Same thing at U of H. They had five players drafted, upgrading talent, right? Upgrading resources at U of H, which is a sleeping giant in Houston, arguably up there with the city that produces the most NFL talent in the country. Five players drafted from those years that had their best seasons ever under Todd Orlando while he was there for only 2 years. And here at Texas, we just went over the list of guys who had their best seasons ever. Puna will probably make the Seahawks squad. Houghton Hill will probably make the Minnesota Vikings squad, but they weren't drafted. But Deshaun Elliott and Malik Jefferson were. That's two guys. And it seems like if you just continue to give him more and more talent, and he just continues to achieve at a higher and higher level. And last year, if you take off that Maryland game, I believe Texas opponents are averaging around 18 points per game, and they allowed around 20 points per game in the Big 12. Those are elite numbers. I know you're picking and choosing because you're taking out the Maryland game, but that's when the defense turned the corner. That's when the switch was flipped, for lack of a better phrase, with Todd Orlando and the crew. So if you got Todd Orlando with that defensive backfield, and he's had a ton of defensive backs that have been drafted since he has been a defensive coordinator. Matter of fact, he's had seven DBs drafted, I think, since he left UConn that he's coached that had their best seasons ever. Five linebackers, one defensive lineman. Very few defensive linemen. That'll change for him when Ed Oliver ends up going to the NFL. But those DBs had their best seasons ever under Todd Orlando. He knows how to utilize really good DB talent and even maximize it. Jason Washington's really good at that, too. You go look at his time at Rice, his time at Texas State. He's got seven defensive backs right now in the NFL, and a lot of them were three-star guys or guys who went undrafted. So he's a really good coach. So that young defensive backfield's got a really good young dynamic coach. And they got Todd Orlando, who has got a history of maximizing DBs. He's a guru at it. So I think with that combined, I think they'll be okay. I think it may take them a while. They may initially take a hit. But in the long term, and even by midseason, I think you'll start seeing those young DBs shine. All right, we'll come back. We come back, we'll dive a little deeper behind the burn orange curtain. Also, I want to talk with some NFL, and we'll get into the Jalen Ramsey quarterback rankings. All that and more right here on the Rodcast. This is the Horn, 104.9 AM, 1260. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. I was just talking about Todd Orlando and his affinity for defensive backs. Since he's been a defensive coordinator since 2005, his first gig being with UConn, being there 6 years. That's the only system that he, or at least the only program where he was able to recruit to his system. He was there long enough. And you know, there are a lot of, I mean, I can give you all the guys. I could bore you after death with UConn and give you all the players that UConn has had drafted that Todd Orlando basically either recruited or coached. I won't do that. I will say that UConn in the Super Bowl era, they've had 20 players drafted in the Super Bowl era. From my count, 15 of those 20 players were coached or recruited by Todd Orlando. So basically UConn didn't know what the hell defense was before Todd Orlando pretty much got there and started recruiting guys and kind of building a defensive culture. And he's had 24 players drafted that he has coached and or recruited, and 12 of them have been defensive backs. And that includes Deshaun Elliott from this year. So half the guys who have been drafted that played under Todd Orlando since he's been a defensive coordinator, or the 24, half of those are defensive backs, DBs. So it would actually make sense that if, you know, Tom Herman is building for the future, not only in the conference of the Big 12, which is a pass-happy conference, that you need to be stacked on the back end with that 2018 recruiting class, I think being another example of it. But also, if you're recruiting to the system of Todd Orlando, and even we saw with the Lightning package, he does have a really good track record of developing defensive backs or NFL caliber DBs, even guys with really high ceilings and guys who had, you know, really low expectations, 0 stars and 3-star guys. And Jason Washington, also similar resume from places like Rice and Texas State. And the time there at U of H. So that's good, too. I think that combination will be good for Texas. Todd Orlando hasn't had a lot of defensive linemen drafted. Only 4 defensive linemen have been drafted who played under Todd Orlando. The last one was at Florida International. And remember, Puna Ford was not drafted. Ed Oliver will be drafted into the NFL, we assume, the number one overall pick next year. So this defensive line for Texas, Brecken Hager, Charles Omenihu, Chris Nelson, it may be one of the better D-lines that Todd Orlando's had since he's been a defensive coordinator, which also bodes well for the lack of depth at linebacker. So I think that overall can be good too. One other thing about Texas football, and we'll get into some other stuff here in a second, but my man Matt Butler, who follows the Vegas Lines, he brought this to my attention. So, and we were doing our Longhorn Blitz podcast, Jeff Howe, Horns 24/7, my man Matt Butler, and myself. And he informed me of the lines that are out for the Texas games and the Maryland game. That line is out. USC, the line, TCU, K-State, OU, Oklahoma State, and West Virginia. Those lines are out. And Vegas loves Texas. And maybe it's because Longhorn fans are just suckers. And when anything about the burnt orange and it's optimistic, they know they'll get Longhorn fans, which is a huge fan base, one of the biggest in all the sports, to go there and bet. But the Maryland game, remember, initially started out at Texas as a 10-point favorite. Now they're a 13-point favorite. So that line moved from the initial line 3 points. And Texas will be on the road, by the way, to face Maryland, a team that beat them last year at home. And they return a lot of starters, by the way. Maryland's not going to be an easy win for Texas on the road either. USC started out with Texas as a 1-point dog, a 1-point underdog at home. That line has moved 5 points, 5.5 actually. Now Texas is a 4.5-point favorite over USC. It comes from sportsbook.ag. TCU started out as a pick'em. I don't know why. And now Texas, according to this website, is a 5.5-point favorite. That line moved 5.5 points.
Yeah, all this is going to move again, too. Watch.
It will. But K-State, at K-State, the purple kryptonite, along with TCU, Texas is a 7.5-point favorite. Wow. And OU went from OU being a 12-point favorite, Texas being a 12-point dog, to now Texas being a 5-point dog. That line moved 7 points. Oklahoma State, Texas is a 2-point favorite. And against West Virginia, Texas is a 9.5-point favorite. Vegas loves Texas. And, I think it's for a lot of reasons. I think Texas faces a lot of teams that will have, you know, Maryland will be in disarray with their issues with DJ Durkin and the unfortunate scandal with Jordan McNair and his passing away and them dealing with that. USC is going to have a brand new quarterback. Sam Darnold will be gone. TCU will have a brand new quarterback from Kenny Hill or Kenny Trill. So they'll have a new time starter. Oklahoma State, new time starter. Oklahoma, new time starter. Texas Tech, new time starter for the most part. So all these teams Texas is going to play, they're going to have a new time starter. Are they going to have issues going on that are much deeper than that? You know, all of these teams are primed, I should say. Yeah, now, Texas could lose them too, but, you know, Texas is in a really, really good position. You know, when they play USC, that's right after they play Stanford. I mean, that's exactly where you want them. When they play TCU, it's going to be right after TCU plays Oklahoma State. You know, that's where you want a team coming off a hard game. Texas, that does line up for Texas, but Vegas really likes Texas. Maybe they just really like Tom Herman. But I think they like the quarterback situation. I've been saying that forever. Texas has the best quarterback situation in the Big 12. They got the only guy that started an entire season coming back. And they got Sam Ellinger, the guy with the high ceiling. They got both of them. Last year, only Oklahoma State and OU pretty much went the entire season playing the same quarterback. Everybody else had to use a backup. And even OU used Kyler Murray situationally. You're going to need that guy, and Texas has the best option at that guy. All right, I promised you Jalen Ramsey stuff. It's basically, I think it's going to end up being a situation when keeping it real goes wrong here.
You're watching When Keeping It Real Goes Wrong.
Okay, so Jalen Ramsey did an interview with GQ. And, you know, Jalen Ramsey, he's very outspoken, always been that way. And I didn't really get a chance to read the entire interview. I just kind of stopped when I got to the quarterback rankings, which, and I encourage anybody, go check it out for yourself. The quarterback rankings are great. But he basically was asked what quarterbacks don't suck, because he wasn't hating on every quarterback, but he was pretty much pumping himself up as a defensive back in the interview. And the question was, who are the quarterbacks in your opinion who don't suck? He said Aaron Rodgers doesn't suck. Tom Brady doesn't suck. He brought up Marcus Mariota. He said I think he is a great quarterback for their team. He said he thought Tyrod Taylor was actually a better quarterback than he gets credit for because he doesn't make mistakes. That was in the first part. He also brought up Jimmy Garoppolo. He said, I don't know if he's good yet. He said, I guess he's good, but he thinks it's more the scheme. He said it was all schemes. He didn't beat us. It was like it wasn't like he diced us up. It literally was all schemes, which is giving props to Kyle Shanahan, actually, and talking about how really how awesome that offense is and how prolific that offense is. He did say this, Texans fans, if you're wondering, and he's got to play the Texans twice a year. He said Deshaun Watson, he'll be the league MVP in a couple of years. 100%. There's not even a debate about it. Him and Carson Wentz, for every year starting now until 5 to 10 years, it's going to be them two. They're that good. Nice. I mean, he's the best quarterback in the league, so his opinion, it matters a little bit. Jared Goff, he said, is average to above average. He said, I guess, yeah, he's good. Dak Prescott, he said, yeah, he's good. He's all right. He's okay. I'll put it that way. Zeke runs that team. Everything runs around Zeke. He liked Kirk Cousins. He said, Kirk Cousins, he's good. I think he's a winner. He's a hell of a competitor. He also said he likes Derek Carr. I think he's good. He said, Eli Manning, it's not really Eli. It's Odell Beckham Jr. He said, Russell Wilson is good. He asked about Blake Bortles. He says, I think in crunch time moments like last year's playoff game, not as a team because we would have trusted him, but I think as an organization we should have trusted him more to keep throwing it.
All right, I see the agenda here.
He said Blake does what he has to do. More quarterback, Nick Foles, he says he's good enough. They had a hell of a good team, and he won the Super Bowl. So he said he's good enough. Drew Brees, he says, I'm a fan of Drew Brees, so he likes Drew Brees. He said, Ryan Tannehill, I haven't heard the greatest stuff about him, but I don't know him personally, so I can't tell. I don't watch their games. Phillip Rivers, I think he's pretty good. All right, and he said, Matt Ryan, I think he's overrated, by the way.
Everybody, he didn't even know Matt Ryan's name. He goes, who's that Atlanta quarterback?
He did. He said, what's the Atlanta quarterback's name? I think Matt Ryan's overrated. You can't tell me you went MVP 2 years ago.
He's dissing all Super Bowl winners.
And then last year, you're a complete bust. He's actually getting a lot of props to Kyle Shanahan, who was with Matt Ryan the MVP year.
Twice. And he's done that twice now.
Yeah, actually, the whole thing with Jimmy Garoppolo, too. I'm looking for the other ones here. I think that's about it. Okay, so to recap.
Did you go over Flacco?
Not
yet. It
was
yet. Only one line.
Oh,
one
yeah.
line needed.
He did. He did say, yeah, because I was going to get to this.
Flacco, let's be honest.
He says Flacco sucks. Yeah, that was the term. He actually put it out there. He says Flacco sucks. He also said Josh Allen sucks. He doesn't like that pick about Josh Allen. He said that Josh Allen pick was a bad pick. Matter of fact, I'll read the Josh Allen note because I think it's actually pretty fun. He started out saying, I think the Buffalo Bills draft pick Josh Allen is trash. I don't care what nobody say. He's trash, and it's going to show, too. That was a stupid draft pick. So he's not a fan. He also was waiting to say, I think Lamar Jackson should have been drafted higher, and Joe Flacco sucks. That's about it. So to recap, Joe Flacco sucks. Also, Josh Allen sucks. He doesn't like Josh Allen. Matt Ryan is overrated. And, oh, I forgot about this. Big Ben. He dissed Big Ben, too. I forgot about the Big Ben diss. He dissed Big Ben, too. He basically said if he thought Big Ben was overrated, too. That
a benefit of Antonio Brown.
Yeah, he basically gives more props to Antonio Brown than he does to Big Ben. So he basically dissed as many quarterbacks as you can diss. I mean, you're dissing Super Bowl guys. But he likes Aaron Rodgers. He likes Drew Brees. He likes Tom Brady. He likes Mariota. He likes Tyrod Taylor. Carson Wentz, Deshaun Watson. He's not sure about Garoppolo or Goff. He likes Dak. Dak's good. Kirk Cousins he likes. Derek Carr he likes. Russell Wilson he likes. Am I missing anybody? Who else does he like that I'm going to mention?
Really like nobody.
Doesn't like Big Ben. But I'm telling you, he got to play Big Ben coming up too, by the way. He's got to play Big Ben November 18th. They got to play the Steelers. So, and he's got to play the Cowboys. He didn't really say anything about Dak Prescott. He did say he's good. Josh Allen and the Bills, you got to play them November 25th. Got to play Ryan Tannehill and the Dolphins December 23rd. He talked bad on them. He's got to play the Giants, and he said it's not really Eli. He's got to play them September 9th. He also dissed the Colts, too. He said, I don't really think that Andrew Luck's that good, by the way. I forgot that. He said, I think it was T.Y. Hilton that made him good. And so he's got to play the Colts on November 11th. It's going to be fun to watch. He's got to play the Eagles, too. So I think it'll be fun to watch. He's making it. It'll be must-watch television when he goes up against all these quarterbacks that he decides to diss. Or it could be when keeping it real goes wrong. All right, we'll come back. We come back. We'll dive into more NFL news, notes, and nuggets. Other than more right here on the broadcast. This is The Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. You can always hit us up on the Spec Sex Line, 512-337-3776. You also can hit us up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers. My man Wax is at Not The Fake Wax. Been looking over a lot of the lines for the games coming up this season for the Longhorns, at least the ones that are out. My man Matt Butler, we were talking about him on Longhorn Blitz, our podcast. My man Jeff Hive, Horns 247, myself and Matt Butler. And it's amazing. Texas is only an underdog now after the lines have all shifted in one game, at least for the where the lines are out, and that's the OU game. And according to sportsbook.ag, right now only a 5-point dog in that game, which is amazing. So there's a lot of public money. There's some, you know, there's some wise guys out there, somebody with a lot of prodigious clout and cash that likes Texas. So not one person, of course, but plenty of people. Because all of these lines have shifted, and I'm talking about unprecedented type shifts usually. As if you are a degenerate gambler, and I say that in a loving way, because I'm a degenerate, just not a gambling one. But, you know, shifts of, you know, by 1 or 2 points, you know, that may be average. When you get shifts of about 5 points, man, that usually is a sign of something happening. You know what I mean? Usually the wise guys start to pay attention to that. And the USC game started out with Texas as a 1-point dog. Now they're a 4.5-point favorite, which means you got a 5-point shift there. TCU started out as a pick 'em, 5-point shift. Kansas State, well, that wasn't a shift there. But even the OU game, there was a shift of 7 points. It went from OU being a double-digit 12-point favorite to now Texas being just a 5-point dog. Man, and Vegas likes Texas, but the shift when they initially put out the lines, the public, you know, moving the lines, and it's probably why Vegas put them where they did, because the brand of Texas probably gets people excited. It's like the Cowboys, I guess. I guess it's one of those, like Notre Dame, I'm sure is like that too. People, it's just a lot of action on it. But it is surprising that Texas could be favored over TCU. And USC one doesn't shock me. West Virginia in 9.5, that's a big line, considering a lot of the question marks. So people, we've said this all year long, on the outside looking in, people have been very optimistic about Texas. Remember Jerry Palm put out his predictions, his prognostications for the bowl season, and he said Texas would play Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, which means they finished second in the Big 12, which puts them at least at 9 wins, you'd assume. And he's not the only one. I mean, a lot of Vegas institutions, a lot of Vegas websites have Texas second in the Big 12. So we'll see. Right now, there are a lot of questions that need to be answered for Texas. They got a lot of depth issues in a lot of different places. We'll talk about some of the notes coming out of training camp, coming from the scrimmage that the Longhorns had over this past weekend as well. We'll go over the offense a little bit and talk about a big development on offense, in my opinion. We'll also review the transfers on defense. We'll talk about why Longhorn fans should be a little bit optimistic about Eric Cuffey going to Trinity Valley State and John Bunny going to Texas Tech. We'll get into that. And also, I want to talk some Cowboys. There's one suggestion I made for the Cowboys months ago that actually may be coming to fruition. So we'll talk about that, too, coming up on the other side. Also, the Reliable Automotive Horn Top 20 comes up, and it's Michigan today. So we'll get into the Michigan Wolverines a little bit. All that and more right here on the Rodcast. This is the Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260.